The entire rice harvested in Ghana is not enough to feed the people of Greater Accra for 2 weeks.
But then why come people are still complaining that they don't have bias?
I'll share with you a data. I was 25 when I saw $1 million in my personal account. And then I came across a document of a shipment of rice from Vietnam to Ghana. I went through the documents and I saw the numbers and I'm like, I wanted to work with Ghanaians. I thought it was a good idea. The first thing that comes to an average Ghanaian person's mind when he's given an opportunity in a business field is steal. In 3 months, we had just lost over $1 million.
As of rice.
Of rice. No revenue, no recovery.
Rice is gone.
The company is in debt.
I see.
They would rather work for, say, a Lebanese man who has very strict and low salary rate. The system is so tight. That way, Ghanaians want to work.
If someone chooses to import rice, what is the process? I've been hearing that the imported rice is still cheaper than the locally produced rice. Why?
It's quite simple, but very complicated.
All right. Is that because the rice business is lucrative? If you're a young person, you're looking for other options, you don't know what to do, you're trapped in a financial cycle, this conversation is for you. Welcome to Connected Minds Podcast. My guest today is Christian Zen Amo. He's a founder and CEO of CH Rider Group. He owns companies in transport. He has his own rice brand. He has real estate companies. So many businesses that I think he's going to be the person to talk about it. He's a young man, not even 30 years yet, but he has built what is already a legacy for him and the people he will leave behind. Now listen, if you didn't know that you can listen to Connected Minds on Apple or Spotify, just go on your phone right now, search Spotify, find the app and search Connected Minds Podcast. Anytime you're running, you're in a busy traffic somewhere in Nairobi, Lagos or Accra or London or New York, you can listen to Connected Minds. Everything Chris is going to speak about today, I'll give him the opportunity to also help some of our audience and our community members on Tribe to have access to him. And he said he's willing to do that. So thank you so much. And if you're not already in the Connected Academy group, the link is in the description. Join so you can have access to some of the entrepreneurs that we interview here. Ask them questions. And hopefully that is going to help you. Chris, you're welcome to Connected Minds Podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. To get really deep into the conversation, why should anybody listen to this conversation to the end?
I think there is value in it. It's a real experience being shared from my personal life experience in terms of business.
Yeah.
And the journey I have walked, I feel it will inspire some people who are watching.
What do you know about money that is different from the average Ghanaian you meet?
That indeed, money answers all things.
Reinforcing what the Bible says.
Right.
You think that perspective is different from what the average youth in Africa knows about money?
I think a lot of people fear money. I don't. For instance, you tell someone, hey, that thing cost 100,000. And they're like, whoa, that's fear. They fear money. I don't fear money. So people who don't fear money, they're able to control it and turn it into the way they want it. Understand? So I think every average Ghanaian person out there should not fear money. Should command it.
Why do they fear money, in your view?
I think they're scared because probably they don't know what to do with it. And that's why we as entrepreneurs have to help people know what to do when they come across amounts of money, no matter how small, just turn it. If you're able to control money, you can control anything.
Hmm.
So don't be scared about money or scared of money. Just know how to use it.
This thing about people being scared about money, is that cultural, traditional, or just Ghanaian?
You see, there's this philosophy, nature philosophy. Like how you grow up is who you be, blah, 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 how you are nurtured and all that. When I'd always use myself as an example. Yeah, I grew up from a poor home, you know, that kind, that your dad is a farmer, your mom sells. So we didn't see a lot of money. And so to us, to me specifically, when I see some sort of money, others will shiver, like, hey, that's a lot of money, you know, it can, but I wasn't. I wasn't afraid. I never quaked. Because I know if I had it, I would know what to turn it into even tenfold of it. So I think it's how we are brought up. You know, our generation, possibly, most of us are brought from poor homes and we were taught to fear money because our parents didn't have, and how they spoke of money, and even to a certain extent that people who have money are considered to be probably, you know, some superstitious ritualists and all that. Yeah, if you have money, you're probably a
ritualist. An occultic.
Yes,
or
right.
Fraud.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Or you're not living right.
Or a drug dealer.
A drug dealer, you know. Yes. But, and so that also kind of limits the young to know what to do if they should come across money, or how they could go about their lives to make money. Because they're like, oh, when I was young, there was this big man who had a lot of money, and they say he is that. So that put fear in them. So they grow with it. So nature, they grew with it. And so even at their age now, they're still afraid of money. And so they settle for less.
Huh. Now that you're talking about how people were brought up, take me into your world.
You see, there are times as a child, you just realized you're a human being. So when I realized I'm a person living in a family, I saw my dad go to farm. And I saw my mom sell grounded pepper and cassava in the market. And that's how I realized, yo, I'm from a poor home. Better still, my dad always made sure me and my brother, we got the best. So we were the poor children in the only proprietary school in my village. So we didn't have friends, you know, because they knew us. They knew a farmer, and that people would come and pick up their kids in fancy cars. We would walk to school. That's how I knew I didn't grow up in a rich home or something. But that also taught me how to be humble, because, you know, as a man, when you're afflicted, you get humble. So,
yep.
So it taught me how to be humble and how to actually value genuine friendship. So every friend I made while I was young is actually a genuine friend, because they weren't my friends because I had something. They were just
right.
Interested in me. So I didn't grow up from that kind of home. But I was able to be taught how to live right. And that fear, although, was not instilled in me, even though my parents never allowed us to watch movies. I think I had a different mind growing up. When I saw people who were well-to-do and their children, I saw myself doing even better if I had the opportunity. So I had a different mind growing up. And my parents restricted us from watching movies because they thought, at that time, there were a lot of Nigerian movies that had to do with ritualists and all that. And they thought those could affect us and join those people to make money. So we were basically taught to fear money.
Right, right. And because it was shown in the movie so many times,
right.
Especially the Nigerian movies.
Right.
Yeah, Kanayo,
right, and, exactly.
Peter Dochi,
exactly.
Yeah. We saw all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and all the times you in every movie that was showing, you get to find out that the rich and successful person is actually an occult person, and
that
so
true.
We weren't really taught well what we should know about money.
But how come you are different, though?
I think I watched the rich people.
But where did you find them if you're from a neighborhood where...
They're in the town. They're
okay.
In the town. So I watched them. I remember we were just neighbors with extremely wealthy people. Just at the backyard is us.
Okay.
So I watched their lives.
I'm just about to explore something.
Right.
How many siblings are you?
So we're six in total. I'm the first. And The first two children are males, and the rest are females.
Okay. Now, out of your siblings,
right,
which of you guys are entrepreneurs?
I am.
Okay. I don't know whether it's orchestrated supernaturally for you to become. But mostly, you know, when you see poor families, it's maximum two. You know, one person makes it and then pick the other. One of them is... Why you?
I got an awakening.
Okay.
Because I looked at dad, I looked at mom, and I looked at the extended family, and I realized, yo, no one's coming to save us. So I got an awakening very young.
How old were you when the awakening happened?
I think I remember maybe like 12, 13 years old. And at that time, my grandma, may she rest in peace, she passed, she would sell beads. You know, the beads that the women put on their waist, yep, and the king's beads that they make them into chains and wrists beads. My grandma makes them. So while my siblings would stay home and play, I would go with my grandma to sell. So most of the money that we made in our family actually came from my grandma. She was quite an entrepreneurial person. And she became very successful. Well, to us, she was the one with the money.
Mm.
Yeah. So her main business was making the bead. But she had farms, animals, ducks, pigs, sheep that people would come and buy that would bring income. And she would always take me along to sell. So I picked that from her.
Hold on. my mind is just spoke with Timothy Amo, spend some time with your grandma. Derek Abaite, spend some time with grandma. You, spend some time with grandma. And I think two other people, I can't remember the name, spend time with grandma. These are all business people. What is it about grandmas and entrepreneurs?
I think their generation.
Yeah.
Were the ones that would work regardless to give a balance to their family. Regardless of what it is, they would do. My father's generation are the ones that would only do something enough. But in our generation, we are looking for comfortability. My grandma's generation, I would explain again.
Mm-hmm.
Take for a simple scenario, yeah? Olden times, those guys, you tell them work and I'll give you 5 cedis a day, they would work. Regardless of the condition, they're looking for that 5 cedis to provide for their generation, which is our father's generation, to make sure they're okay. But they would really work. They had the value for your company. Our father's generation, they would work, yes. But partially, you know, they could switch to anything. And our generation now, we're looking for anything comfortable. That's why people put in resignation letters. My grandma's generation never put in resignation letters. Our father's generation would never put in resignation. In fact, they'll do double jobs. But our generation, we resign.
And the Gen Zs, they don't want to work at all.
They don't.
What's your drive in life? Like, what drives you?
The will to do something. The will to be a blessing to other people. And also that desire to have a legacy.
Look, I am speaking to you. Somebody... Not even 30 years yet. I know the businesses you own. There's about 6 businesses under your belt. In fact, it's more than that. And conventionally, you did not go through that system of education.
No.
You're doing so well for yourself.
Thank you.
Like, I don't know. I really want the audience to really capture this at this point, which is the awakening is what has made you. Right. That awakening. So I want you to take me back that awakening. The aha moment. What did it do to your mind?
No one is coming to save me.
Those are words.
Yeah.
Like, people hear it. You've just said it.
Yeah.
It hasn't awakened people the way you should.
For me, it did from the inside. So, while I was in Nigeria, while I was on the streets of Lagos, I was also, you know, reminding myself of where I came from. After 2 years, the question was, what next? I didn't really believe so much in school. Because that's not the only way to get educated. School is just one of the best ways to get educated. So I didn't really put my plans there. I just knew I could go for anything I want. If I can make you, I can convince a stranger to come join a church, leave his church, come join a church. To me, that's a big win. So I turned that Christian thing into a personal life
skill. You were learning.
Yes, I was learning while I was on mission. So that was my school. I didn't need to go sit in a classroom and just spend years. And
how old were you at the time?
I had just turned 18.
Good. There's an 18-year-old that is listening to you now.
Right.
What are you going to tell them?
That thing, that thought that makes them nervous, go for it. That has always helped me. That thought that comes to my mind or your mind that makes you think of it so much that you get scared of it. That is it. Go for it.
But what if it doesn't work out?
It would. You would fail, but go for it again. It would work. Trust me, it always does. If you're asking yourself questions about that thing, that thought that has awakened you, that I need to do this, I need to do that, don't be scared. Like I said, people who fear money don't get it. That thought that you're scared of, that is where your success is. So my friends know me for that phrase that if it makes you nervous, it's worth it. That's what I always keep saying.
But how far should people go to chase their dream?
The right way, as far as you can.
The right way, as far as you can.
Yes, that's incredible.
Hmm.
The right way, as far as you can. But you remember, if you are going for your dreams, that means you are the shark of the ocean.
Okay.
Sharks, what do? They bite fishes. That doesn't mean they're bad sharks or they're bad people. That's what they are destined to be. They need to survive. So there's a thin line between being a shark and being a bad shark. Now, what I mean is going for what you want the right way is to, say, utilize the resources in terms of people around you to get what you want, but the right way. For instance, you know person A who has that, but you don't. And you know person B who needs that, but they don't. What do? You get it, you give it to person B. Happy people. But you've gained more than each of them. So you are the shark. You just buy them and move on. That's how you conquer. That's how it works for me.
One of my friends made some beautiful analogy around the same thing that you said. He said, you know, in this world, you are either a shark or a shrimp.
Mm.
And what happens to shrimps? They get eaten. Right? Yeah. So the choice is yours.
Right.
You know, which one you want to be. You want to be a shark or a shrimp? And, you know, it's something really for people to think about.
When I started my business, I didn't have any money. To be honest, I had zero money, but I just had a vision and a dream. I got people to give me money that I wasn't even so sure of it being a success. They didn't even know what it would end up be, but I was able to get them to put down money.
How did you do that?
Thank you. Like I said, you just find out the problems people have, and then you provide the solutions. Someone's problem is he or she have got a lot of money and don't know what to do with it. Go find a solution to that person's problem. A person who provides solution to problems is a successful person. All the people in the world that we know of, they're successful ones. They've always provided solutions to problems. Without actually using their own resources. It's just people, they provide a solution to the problem someone has.
I said it some time back and they were eating me in the comments on TikTok.
You wouldn't know until you try it. So people will come and eat you in the comments because they haven't even tried it and they don't know it. People say, oh, but you need money to start something. You need this. Trust me. Even at my stage now, I'm still doing other businesses that requires my zero money. A very simple one. A friend of mine owns a poultry farm, right? So that means he gets eggs I know people who own restaurants. I just tell him, supply me the eggs and come for your money. They bring the eggs and I go and give it to this. I add my markup. Did I put anything there? No, but I just made easy money.
Oh, well, how about the person you need to become for people to trust you enough?
You need to be brought up right. Can your yes be your yes and your no be your no? But you also remember your surroundings matter. You need to be able to win people. So you need to carry yourself very well. Don't lie, but just be upright and straight as you can with everyone. But try and surround yourself with winners. Every winner has a problem.
Hmm.
So surround yourself with the winners and then listen to their problems and provide solutions to their problems. You gain their trust.
Boss, where did you learn this from?
I think from my own personal experiences as how it has taught me. No one taught me anything. I just lived it.
Let's get inside.
Right.
Your business.
Right.
At which point did you start a business? Because when I was doing my research, you failed several times. Now, talk me through the process to starting a business, the fall, and the rise again.
Sometime from 2019, I moved from the Philippines to Vietnam as an English teacher. And then over there, I met people, new people.
Let me stop you here for a minute. So if it's your first time watching Connected Minds, or you have been here before but still have not subscribed, do us a favor. Because majority of the people that watch our videos have not subscribed. This doesn't help us grow beyond what we expect. So help us by hitting the subscribe button. Thank you. Now let's get back to the conversation.
And like I said, every time I meet a new person, I try to find the problem, trying to find who you are. Because I'm trying to find out how I can, you know, gain by using or utilizing the resources you have the right way. So you are happy, I'm happy, and I move on. But I gain more than you. So it's a very nice, simple thing. So I've made a friend whose dad is apparently a very big man in the country. So I stopped teaching and I became his friends and followed him doing his projects. You know, help him out with his projects. He was doing NFT, it failed. He was doing a whole lot of stuff. You know, during that time, NFT was a big thing. I was helping him out, doing all that. So that circle I was in his, I had already gained their trust and they had gained mine. So he introduced me to his father, who is a general director of a Vietnamese government company. It's about 65 years old at that time, the company. The company has never employed any foreigner since its beginning, and even until now. And they have never explored outside their territories. So I got there and the man asked me, what can you do? And I said, I can take your company across Vietnam. Zero experience. I didn't even know what I was talking about, but I had that confidence. He said, okay. He created an international department, commercial department for us, and I was made the lead. And I started just searching whatever I could do for that company. So we were doing deals. We were just transacting internationally. South Korea, Japan, they were having multiple international deals coming. And every time you make that, you get commission from the company. So I had built up. When I was young, people say, oh, I made my first million when I was this, when I was that. I thought I couldn't. Like, it's not real. Trust me, it is real. It is real. I've seen money. I was 24, 25 when I saw $1 million in my personal account. I made my first million at that time. And I'm like, time to run back.
Huh.
I had been in Southeast Asia for so long. So I saw the system there. And there's these bikes that people book for them to carry them around, like Uber, but this time in the form of motorbike. So they call them Grab. And I'm like, that could work in Ghana. So why not open a company? Well, and then the name came Rider with a Y. So CH Rider Group initially was opened purposely to come and have something like that Uber thing, but for motorbikes, where you regulate them. And along the way, I realized, oh, it's illegal to use motorcycles for commercial purposes, only for delivery of package and all that. But I had already registered a company anyway. So we built the app, we did that, but I stopped. So I went back.
Back to the job.
But I hadn't lost money. I hadn't even spent a lot of money on that. In fact, those monies that were used well from people, my money was still there. So I reached back to other people and I said, hey, look, we will not be allowed to operate because of this, that. I could pay you back. And like, no, retain it. We would wait for you. That's because I have we've got trust. So they didn't pull back. They just said, okay, shut it, like pause it. When it's ready, let us know. And then I was working in the company. And then I came across a document of a shipment of rice. I was never supposed to see that document anyway. But I just took a peek of it. And then I saw a whole vessel of rice shipment from Vietnam to Ghana. So I got interested and I went through the documents and I saw the numbers and I studied the numbers. And I'm like, wow. And something just hit me. This could be it.
Mm.
Because for a very long time, I've been looking for something, a legacy that when someone mentions my name, I'll be known for. I want to make my family proud. I also want to help my community.
Yeah.
When I first made my money, I had an advice from friends, two friends actually, who asked me to relocate to Switzerland, give the money to a Swiss bank and stay and enjoy the dividends every quarter. They're currently there.
Mm.
They're doing, go. We three of us, we did that. We won. So they're there. As of now, they give the money to the Swiss bank and they're having fun. But I chose not to. I had that option. Being selfish, go there, live my life, get married, you know, just me, my wife, kids, forget about. But I knew where I was coming from. I knew the home I came from. I knew that I have a responsibility to my family. Additionally, I knew that I have a responsibility to my neighbor, my community, and my country in all. I love Ghana. Trust me. I've been around a lot of countries, but I've always come back. So I returned with my money and I said, I want to do rice business. So we came down. I turned the company, I updated the activities of the company from bike to importation of general goods. And I sought the right paperwork to import stuff. And then I did the market research. Then we brought in a heavy shipment, over $1 million.
Of rice.
As our first shipment, I went all in. And so the first brand was Vietstar. I just needed a name. So I thought of Vietnam and I thought of Ghana. And Ghana has the black star. I'm like, Vietnam and Ghana star. So Vietstar. And we created Vietstar brand. I was all over the place, you know. Young guy, have a lot of money, bringing rice and all that. It was good. I seem to have drifted away from what I was, because I let the money control me a bit. I forgot myself. I was living the life. Yeah. And at a point, I was forgetting family and even values. I didn't have time for family. I didn't even have time for people who knew me, because I was like, oh, I'm so busy with work. I'm making new friends in Accra. Remember from the beginning, I said this, that people who grew up with me and are friends with me are still friends with me till this day because they knew me when we had nothing. Their home was even better than my home. And so that's genuine friendship. But the ones I came to make in Accra recently because of that, they were just, I realized they were just following me because of, you know, what I had. And it came at a very great cost. I wanted to work with Ghanaians. I wanted them to have rice supply. Anyone could be a rice seller. Or just sell, make money, bring it, come take another one. So I was doing a credit-based thing. I thought it was a good idea. Until I realized I was just being robbed. So I encountered dishonesty. Everyone. So all of our rice, all of our things went down. Just in 3 months, we had just lost everything. How? We brought the goods. We met new people who said they were businessmen. Not knowing they were sharks, but the bad sharks.
I see.
Like I said.
The cartel.
Yeah, like I said. Every successful or every, you know, successful person has a problem. It is up to us to find out the solution to that problem and how we would use it based on our integrity. I had a problem. I needed to sell rice. That was my problem. I needed people to sell my rice. So that was a problem I had. And I met the other sharks who knew exactly how to solve my problem but end up me being bitten. So I faced that. And we went from there to there. No revenue, no recovery. Rice is gone. Chris is in debt. The company is in debt. I am in debt. How do you do it? That's the question. Like, how do you lose over $1 million in 3 months?
Could you not take legal proceedings?
Right. Exactly what I said. Oh, I'll take them on. Our legal system in Ghana, much respect for the legal system, but it's very slow.
And frustrating.
And very frustrating. And you need to spend a lot of money to even get what you want. Little was recovered. Little. Very little. About what? 5% was recovered. Till date. I have moved on, yes, but till now. We are still in recovery process. Since how long? Since 2022. Some people are still being pursued by the authorities for something that happened long ago and I have already moved on.
How did you recover from that?
Right. That experience brought me back. So when you're afflicted, you become humble. So I got back to my senses. I went back to my roots. I'm like, oh, this was where I began. And then I said, nah. I would rise. But now, I have the experiences. I know how to import something. I also, through it, know the real buyers and the real people who want to do real business. So I also know them. Okay. Go back to your network. Sell that idea. Additionally, I've had a good relationship over there with my suppliers. So I just made a phone call. But it took me about a year to plan all of this. Because I didn't just want to jump back in. I had to take my time to know what it is that I was doing. Because the thing, as every entrepreneur in Ghana knows, is the dishonesty in the country. It's so difficult to trust people that you're working with.
Very.
In our own company. Ghost client names created by employees. We have that mentality that they think that they could build a house inside your business, but they don't know how you even made it. The first thing that comes to an average Ghanaian person's mind when he's given an opportunity in the business field is steal. Make it. That's the problem we have. We still have it even till today. We're dealing with it. I fell a victim to it.
I was in Kumasi, in Lancaster. And while I was having my breakfast, you know, this man came to me. Hey, Derek, you know, I watch your podcast. While we were speaking, the conversation very quickly went to the fact that his employees have put him in debt of about half a million cedis, right? Because they said they were paying the taxes, but they were not paying it. And they got letters from GRA. Within about 3 minutes, another man joined in. The same conversation.
Right.
Another business person, somewhere in Tema, you know, who was around us, joined the conversation. Same thing. You know, employees are killing his business. And I'm like, this is endemic in the country. I went to buy a shirt. The person I was buying the shirt, it was written right there, employees needed. And I'm like, what happened to your workers? I've sacked all of them. Same thing. If we don't actively speak about this, we will struggle to keep Ghanaian businesses alive.
Mm. Let me ask everyone this. The past 5 years till now, tell me which new business that has come and is alive and those that have gone. For the past 5 years, let's say, out of the new businesses that were made, created in 5 years now,
how many of them still exist?
How many of them still exist? About 10% are left. 90% have gone out. One of the factors is the people we work with.
Mm.
And that makes what I'm saying very true. Nature, nurture, philosophy. We're brought up in a home that says that a successful person is probably an occult. So whenever that person gets the chance to work with a successful person, the first thing is hurry up and get out. Grab what you can and exit.
The first 1 year of me doing business in Ghana, I sacked about 13 people.
Oh.
I've had people in my construction business where cement is being stolen. Cement, bro.
And being sold.
Cement.
Yeah.
Right here in this studio, when we were building, behind, they were keeping the cement in the bush. How do you steal cement?
There are buyers.
Iron rod. Price inflation. Now, somebody in the comments in the past have said, oh, it's because you don't pay them well. But actually, listen, somebody like a mason, the price is set. I don't determine the price. They come, they mention their price, you pay them. Why are they still stealing? Right? It's. We will get there. We will get there.
But from nothing to something, you need to be very resilient. And also, because you were something before you became nothing, you already know the frame. You already have the frameworks. You already know how it works. If you have failed, yes, you have failed. Yes, you've been brought down, right? You already know how it worked. It's not like you don't know anything at all. So the first failure is your success. You've tested it. You know where, you know which drum to beat, and it will dance to you. So when we fell, when I came down to zero, at a point my account was negative, something something, and Absa Bank was calling me every time. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I know, but I knew how it could work again. So if you have fallen and you're finding out how you can rise up, go back to your books. How did you even make it? Revisit all that and then find out how you fell and eliminate that way and try again.
You know, my question is, and maybe I should actually not make it a question, I should make a statement that when I was first thinking about business in Ghana, I was always told that sugar and
rice
is cartel.
Yes.
So don't even think about it. True or false?
True. I can boldly say in this country, I am the only youngest rice importer in the country, possibly in West Africa. All the rice importers are above 50, and they're very well connected, and they know people. So yes, it's a cartel. I'll explain it. I can bring rice, right? Say a shipload of rice. And I know how much it is. The value of the rice could be, let's say, $500,000. But in the market, you know, after selling, I could still make my $500,000 and maybe some 10% profit on that. That is fine. But I want to kick you out. So what do I do? We call something predatory pricing. So I scrap everything 10%. Off. Yes. I scrap my 10%.
Do cost price.
Do cost price. And even cut more, I lose. Just so I can keep you out. Because I want to frustrate you. I want to bring you down. That's the problem we face. I won't mention a brand. But there's a rice going for 200 CDs. As low as 200 CDs. It's impossible. Unless you want to tell me you didn't pay your duty. And the rice is free. So the only thing you paid for is probably shipping. There's no way. And it's going now. And people are calling me. Hey, what's happening? What's happening? I don't know. So, if you're a first-time business importing rice, you're definitely going to lose while these guys are there because they're selling lower than yours. And so you'll be forced to bring your prices down, which means you're losing your capital. So afterwards, you'll get out of the business and then they'll be back up. So when you're gone, then that money they spent or lost trying to kick you out, they'll add it to the next shipment of theirs and then they'll make it back.
I mean, they have enough running capital, right? So they can play the game, but you don't.
Also, there's a danger of food security in our country.
Okay.
Our food, rice, sugar, whatever we import, are mainly done by the foreigners, the Middle Eastern and the Indians, and the Lebanese. 80% of the rice importers are all foreigners. I have a serious concern if our country's food security are in the hands of a foreigner. Not to say they're not good, they're not helping our economy. They're there. They're providing jobs. But do you also know why? Because no Ghanaian businessman would survive. Because the people in the companies are robbing the Ghanaians themselves. So they would rather work for, say, a Lebanese man who has very strict and low salary rate, strict environment condition. The system is so tight that you can't do anything. And when you even do something, you go into jail. That way, Ghanaians want to work that way. But they don't want a flexible, comfortable environment.
We say that a lot of these guys are foreigners. While I was having the conversation with one of my friends, someone saying that they've been here for generations and they actually have Ghanaian passports. So they're Ghanaians.
I have a friend who has a Ghanaian passport. He's a great guy. He's from what, Syria? That's a Ghanaian passport.
The fact that this guy, his grandma is even here. They've been here for so long. And sometimes when they speak through a microphone and you don't see them, you might think it's a Ghanaian guy speaking.
They even speak Twi, our language.
Exactly. So, look, Chris, importing rice and locally produced rice. I've been hearing that the imported rice is still cheaper than the locally produced rice. Why?
The cost of production in Ghana is so high, and it's always all borne by the farmer. Over there, the government has put certain things in place where machinery, fertilizers, and everything is taken care of by the government. Government grants them all that real things. You go to the farm, you see a tractor there, a combined harvester there, and the farmer didn't pay anything for it. The government is supporting the agribusinesses there. Over here, you need to go and pay for the tractor. You need to buy your own gasoline or whatever. You need to pay to rent a combined harvester. You need to plow the field.
Yeah,
you need to, all those costs are yours. So at the end of the day, even you will not even get a finer product, but it's still highly priced compared to the one that I have imported. I got a Ghanaian rice that at an exhibition, and they were selling for 450 CDs. And at that time, what they're trying to tell me is that rice is the same as the one I'm importing. And mine was way less. And I just like, why would any Ghanaian? I mean, let's help the agri sector. When I thought of rice, I thought of growing mine in Ghana. Okay. I thought of that. But upon my research, I would have lost. Government will say, oh, we will help agri sector, we'll do this. It doesn't come. I have friends who own farms in Volta region. There's no help. He calls me and like, man, I help him sell his rice.
I see.
I wish something can be done. I pray. If they do something about it, I would come.
So that means this whole thing about Ghanaian made rice, it can never penetrate.
I'll share with you a data.
Okay.
The entire rice harvested in Ghana is not enough to feed the people of Greater Accra for 2 weeks.
I see. But then why come people are still complaining that they don't have buyers? Is it purely
it's
pricing?
It's expensive.
Right.
It's right. Very expensive.
It's just pricing. Pricing.
And it's not their fault. They spent a lot of money to get that. They are suffering.
What's the solution to the problem?
It's going to affect a lot of importers. But if the government pushes an agenda for probably 70% consumption of local produce and 30% importation, it's going to help.
So if I was the government and then I said I was going to increase the import duties on rice, sugar, and wheat, would you be happy? Let me stop you here for a minute. So if it's your first time watching Connected Minds, or you have been here before but still have not subscribed, do us a favor, because majority of the people that watch our videos have not subscribed. This doesn't help us grow beyond what we expect. So help us by hitting the subscribe button. Thank you. Now let's get back to the conversation.
I would be happy if you also support
the farmers.
The farmers. Then I'll find an opportunity and go. So I'll quickly quit and come so I can gain from you.
Do you believe that the cartel, who sometimes also lobby governments, who can make this happen?
Over here, they're helping our economy, yes. But they're building theirs even better. All the money gets sent back to their homes. Like I said, it's a threat to our economy. If the people who control how much food comes into Ghana are foreigners, what if one day they decide, yo, we're done here? What would happen? We'll go hungry.
If someone chooses to import rice, what is the process to be able to get it registered and have it on the market?
You would need to send a sample to FDA.
Okay.
For your certifications. You need to find a reliable supplier who have got all their documents and everything checked. They just put it on the CE, but you transfer them the funds, and then it comes to the port. You need to find a reliable agent who will clear them for you. You need to pay your taxes there, and then you just do your sales. It's quite simple,
but
very complicated.
All right, what's the complication and the complexity of it?
You would now be entering into a very serious market where there are so many brands. A company, a foreign company, owns about 12 brands of rice. Competing against you at a very lower price. Yes.
12 brands.
I know a guy who has 6 brands of rice. And he's a foreigner. So if this doesn't go, this goes. If this doesn't go, that goes.
Is that because the rice business is lucrative?
Very lucrative if you're doing it, yes. But it demands a lot of money. So it's the rich getting richer. But I warn people who want to venture it now, thinking that the moment they join, easy money.
They might face the problems you faced initially.
That. Also, challenge of selling, you would come across it. because you'll be dealing with other brands, lower prices. So if you think you've got, what, some $100,000, you want to start a rice business, better look for the person who already exists.
Uh-huh.
And join that person. Then you coming to create something new. They would find you out. They'll find out you are there and they'll kick you out very nicely. Sometimes I do that.
Shock. Shock. You know? Hey, business is business. It's business. Right? Again, that could be also some of the reasons why some people were advised against business. Just go to school, get a job, Charlie. That's more, there's more dignity in it. You know, if you go and do business, you don't want to be a shark eating somebody up, right?
It's nice.
What's your view on that?
Do you need to go to school to get a job? Do you need to go to school to be able to become who you want
to
be?
To become a doctor, you need to go to school, right?
Really? Our great grandfathers, they were surgeons, but they never stepped foot into school. Like I said, right? School is one of the best ways to get educated.
Yep.
But people think to get educated, you only need to go to school. So, yes, to be a doctor.
Yeah.
It's case by case to be a doctor. You need to go and learn how to become a doctor. But mind you, there have been great doctors who never went to school.
Yeah, that's true. It's a whole different school of thought.
Right.
You know, the lecturer in KNUST will not agree. But that's fine. We're not looking for people that would agree or disagree. This is an awesome conversation.
Right.
But, you know, as I said before, and I'm going to say this again, Chris has decided to speak to some of our audience in Connected Academy group on tribe.io. So if you've got some questions you want to ask and you want to join that call, there's a link in the description. Click and join Connected Academy so that when the call happens, you'll be on there on the Zoom call and ask my man here some questions about how he did it. If you have more questions to ask than I have, then, you know, you need to be there. Chris, why is the system so import-driven?
Because it's failing us locally. Put aside even the agri sector. In the health sector, we have companies that even produce surgical gloves, masks, all those tools and equipment needed in the hospitals and all that. But it's still expensive.
Hmm.
But import a whole box of surgical mask, okay?
And it's much cheaper.
It's less than a dollar. During COVID time, I was abroad, and I heard that masks were scarce in Ghana. I had some connections at that time. We imported masks into Ghana, yeah, and one single mask was going for 20 CDs. But when we brought it, we took 10 CDs. Half the price of what was being done here. Forced them to drop price to 5 CDs. We brought it to 2 CDs. Then to 1
CD. And you were still making profit.
We were still making profit. Our system here does not support the local produce. Whatever sector you go, the local ones are always higher. Whichever sector you go, it's always high.
This is crazy. You know, I've spoken to a lot of people who have got businesses, and about half of them are importers. About half. The rest who are not, their cash flow doesn't even match up to the importers.
Oh, you have to export it.
Yes. But to show you that, you know, Christian actually have a business. I've got one of his brands here, and I want to show you. I'm not going to give this one to you guys, man. So this is no ads. You know, you haven't paid me, have you?
No.
So this is no ad. I'm seeing So it's Ohima Ghanaian, or this Ohima
Ghanaian? Yes, it's the AI version of my mother.
Okay. Yeah, so this is one of his brands on the market. For the purpose of what we do, it's lessons, but if the person also has a business, we also like to support, right? So, awesome. And people can get it. I'll leave all the details in the description of how you can get your hands on Ohima or Vietstar, right? Awesome. Is there anything we haven't spoken about that we can still speak about? You think we covered everything that is relevant for this conversation?
It has been. Let's talk more of how to help people.
Yeah.
Get out of where they feel stuck.
Yes. Talk me through.
To the people who feel stuck, don't know what to do now, you have to trust yourself. Really trust yourself. I'll explain this in the layman view. You don't know what to do means you don't have any source of income. You don't have a job. You don't even have anything. Like, you're just there. Like, a pigeon. I just did, Charlie.
Mm.
And then those people are the ones that say, Charlie, put me on. There's something you can put yourself on. First, stand up. Trust your gut. And go out. Surround yourself with sharks.
How do you find a shark?
Bro, they are out there. Somebody must know somebody. Definitely. Somebody knows somebody. Go. Step out. Try and build connections now. When you meet a shark, find out their problem. Personal problem or business problem. Find out a problem of that particular shark. There's no successful person on this planet that doesn't have a problem. Even God have issues. Us. Yes, his problems are, how do I make children on earth not commit a sin? That's his problem. So people, you know, preachers arise all the time, providing solution to God's problems. And that's why he blesses them. Right. So every person on earth has a problem. You, that you have nothing. That is your problem. How do you get something? Go find someone who has something. But go with a very nice mentality. Don't go to cheat. Go to provide solution. Charlie, I don't know anyone I can think of. Like who? Start from where you are. That friend that always comes and goes, he knows another friend who is a shark.
Mm.
Follow that friend. Go meet the shark. But here's the thing. Don't quickly just jump on the shark. Hello, my name is... No, it's a skill. It's a skill. Take your time. It may take you even, like, what, a month, 2-3 months. Because people like myself, when I meet new people, I take time before I get them in. And it mostly, they never even come. Because they haven't given me a solution to something that I'm facing. You get it?
Mm.
So you need to be valuable to the shark you meet. So when you get out there in search of something for yourself, you want to put yourself on something, and you get the opportunity, one time, pick it, ask of their problems, or just try and find out.
Yeah,
in conversation. What the challenge is. Even if you don't have the solution, once you hear of the challenge, your action, an attempt in trying to help them, you would already win their trust. They would be like, oh, okay, he's actually trying to help me out for nothing, which is good. And then go again. Nurture that relationship. Nurture it. Hello, hi, were you able to get this done? Yeah, sure. Because trust me, we need each other.
Mm.
You need someone's shoulders to stand on. Someone needs to hold your hands. Someone needs to pull you. And those people, they need to know the value of why they're pulling you.
Wow.
Mm. First step, trust your gut.
Yep.
Secondly, surround yourself with a shark.
Yep.
Identify the shark's problem.
Yep.
I consider myself as a custodian of people's money.
Okay.
People give me money to do business with them, for them. I just receive a call and they come like, I have this much money. I wanna bring it so that you give me something, please. Beyond Ghana, in Africa, Congo, I received a friend. He brought his father. He wants to do business, but he has money. He doesn't know what to do with it. I'm like, okay, we'll do it. Right. The trust is there. You know, we treat our clients and partners fairly. All the people who have investments in my company, they're all multimillionaires. Like, they've got money. They've got a lot of money. They're very successful. But they have problem because it is never enough for humans. We need more. Translated into the local dialect, it's even raising the sea, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So you always need more. You always need to make more. And they always need to make more, but they feel like they've exhausted all their options. Well, yeah. How do I do something new? And that's when they meet someone who has solution to that problem, they quickly go for. So when you find that shark and you find his problem, trust me, it works. It does.
You're already winning.
It is working.
Yep.
I don't have anybody younger than me who has given me money. And you need to know what you're going to do with that. So remember, never be afraid of money. Have a vision for it. And then trust, get out, find that person. Build a connection, build a network, provide solution to some of his problems. Then you'll be able to pitch something to that person.
Awesome.
And trust me, you won't even talk more. They will just do it.
Yeah. Chris, motivation or discipline?
Discipline. If you're disciplined,
yep.
That's self-motivating.
Mm.
You're very disciplined. You strictly abide by your principles. That motivates others, even inspires others. And when you feel like you're inspiring other people, that motivates you to do more, to be more disciplined.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. What's the best advice you have ever received?
Slow is fast.
Slow is fast. I think someone has said it before. Slow is fast. I think someone has said it before. But that's good.
From my friend in Vietnam, he said, you're doing well. But it's a lesson.
Mm.
When you feel you're really getting there, you're really doing it, go slow.
Yep.
So you'll be able to control whatever comes.
Yeah.
So take your time. Slow is fast. As slow as you can get, you'll be moving faster.
I call it excitement. The reason a lot of millionaires lose their first million is because of excitement. Yes. The burst.
Yes.
The burst. Ooh, man. And it's there. I always say that what left you is just at the door.
Right.
If you open it, it's going to rush back in and close it again.
Exactly.
Right.
So if you lost,
yeah,
just go back to the books.
Yeah.
You'd find it right there at the door.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Can you recommend a book for us?
Too Good They Can't Ignore You.
Hmm. Too Good They Can't Ignore You. Never heard of that book, actually. Too good. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Really appreciate you for coming. And we're going to have a lot more conversation.
Wonderful.
And I'll see you on the live call as well. I appreciate you for accepting that for us. And to the people that made it to the end, I'd love to know in the comments. And if you are going to be on the entrepreneurs call, you have access to speak and ask questions, more questions, right? Thank you so much. My name is Derek Abaite, and I have been your host today. Connected Minds. Take care. I'm out.